A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away,
you're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
That's right, Whistler. Welcome to episode 138 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, your Star Wars discussion podcast, your podcast of legends, your ticket to that galaxy far, far away. Our episodes broadcast on the Star Wars Report website, Second Airborne Division, at www.starwarsreport.com. Episodes can also be found on iTunes, Zune, as well as on Stitcher, and right on our own Twitter and Facebook pages at SW Beyond Films. Hey, but enough about how you got here. Let's get the show started. I'm one of your hosts, the defender of the EU, the champion of the multiverse, the bipolar Star Wars fan, Mark Herleman. And with me, like a Jedi out of communication with the Order, the EU guru himself, the Count of Two Continuities, Mr. Nathan P. Butler.
Hey, everybody. We are here to tell you about the Twinkie this time. Some people will get it, and some people will be like, what is he talking about?
Twinkie. Here at Star Wars Beyond the Films, we ask the tough questions. Questions that have bothered you for a long time, or simple ones that have perplexed you off and on. What's with the Twinkie? You ponder about Star Wars, and so do we. This episode, we ponder Hayden Blackman's Darth Vader in the Ghost Prison by Dark Horse Comics, issues 1-5. Now, before we get too deep into spoiler territory, we'll give you our quick spoiler-free rundown. Just be sure to jump off at Tarkin's Ergons.
That's right, Darth Vader and the Ghost Prison. Two in the box, ready to go. We be fast and they be slow. Okay, I'm done with the Ghostbusters jokes now, I think. This is probably my favorite of all the Darth Vader series. We've got Darth Vader and the Lost Command, which we covered in the last couple episodes. We've got Darth Vader and the Ghost Prison, obviously, this one. We have Darth Vader and the Ninth Assassin, a.k.a. Darth Vader and the Lack of Plot. And then we've got Darth Vader and the Cry of Shadows. And the running theme through all of them, even to an extent, Ninth Assassin, though we don't really get the motivations behind the assassin character or anything more about that particular individual, it tends to be a study in Vader that's not from Vader's point of view. It tends to be a focus on the people around him, even if it's the people around him in his former life. Like, even when it came down to what we got with Lost Command, in a lot of ways, Vader was a central character, of course, but it was about the life he could have had with Padme and such, and that being the thing that drives him and shapes him, and seeing the questions of loyalty to this Empire. The other big running theme is this idea that the Empire itself may inspire loyalty initially, but when you start looking at what they're doing, in a lot of cases, it doesn't. It starts to wither under its own oppression and such. This one has very good artwork by Augustin Alessio, I believe is how you pronounce it, though I could be completely screwing it up. And in this case, Hayden Blackman tells a relatively personal story for one character that takes us through it, who is not Vader, seeing it kind of from participating, but from outside of Vader's own head, and gives us a story that has some nice twists and turns. It's kind of a shock initially, conceptually, that winds up working out very well. I mean, it's, again, like I said, it's probably my single favorite Darth Vader story of this era, not just from this series, but of this era. I mean, it even outdoes Purge in that sense, because as cool as it is to see Vader going after remaining Jedi and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't have the personal nature that this does, and doesn't have the scope that this does. The only thing that takes me out of this story is the fact that, given how big the events are that happen in this story, you would think that they would have been mentioned at some point by someone at some other time. But of course, you can't do that until a story is written. So we have stories written in this era that you would think would have mentioned this, that don't, simply because this story came later, even if it happens before some of those other stories. It's just sort of the nature of the way that Star Wars is put together chronologically and publishing chronologically. But great series. This is one to check out. And thankfully, none of these Darth Vader series are connected enough that to read one, you must read the others, or to read one, you must understand the ones that came before. You can pick up just Darth Vader and the Ghost Prison, have this fun ride, and never touch the other three Vader series. So pick it up if you haven't yet. It's definitely worth the read.
Yeah, I kind of got the feeling this one took place before the last one, in fact. I mean, this one seemed to be like a few months after the events of Episode 3. This, too, is by far and away my favorite of these as well. Not only do I like what it does for Vader, I like how it kind of gives you an idea of the sense of what's going on with the Empire at this moment. But yeah, I mean, for Vader, it's a really fun story. For me, I really enjoyed the character, and I'm not even sure if I'm saying it right, Lorita Tom?
That's how I've always pronounced it.
All right. Well, a unique name, to be sure. But a character that I really enjoyed, you know, he'd been in a bombing of some sort, you know, and had to have half his face and lost an arm, which I found was kind of interesting. You know, just the fact that the character himself was crippled and did not have any robotic prosthesis. You know, I mean, he had no arm coming out. He was missing his left arm. So that was an interesting twist on the character as well, plus the way that the plots all worked out for that character. I really enjoyed the way that the log was presented, that it was all considered a file given to Palpatine, and there's aspects of the file that, like, Vader was like, this stays off the record, and then he's like, and while I would normally do that, this record is for the Emperor, so I gave full disclosure. I really enjoyed the way that all played out. And the twist at the end here, unlike what we get in Darth Vader and the Ninth Assassin, this one really got me excited. I was like jaw hanging open, like, are you kidding me? Like, that was so cool. So yeah, I really like this one. And it's kind of sad that you go from this to the Ninth Assassin, because, I mean, this really upped the game for the idea of what they were doing with the Darth Vader series here. And it's like you said, Nathan, it's easy to not really call it a series because they're not really connected. And I think that that also works in this case, because while there was a moment where I was sitting there reading it going, is this actually after the first one or before it? Then I stopped and I was like, it doesn't matter, because it doesn't actually connect to the story beyond the fact that Vader's involved. So, once I got past that and moved right along, I was flying right through it. I enjoyed the art. The concept of the story, you know, the Ghost Prison and what it was all about was profound. I mean, especially on the reread, I was just like, oh my God. Like, there's a moment where Vader just freaks out about everything that the Jedi were doing. The fact that they were lying to him all that time and stuff. And it plays so well into everything that we've seen on screen and what we were going to be seeing later with Vader coming in and all this hate Vader had. It just makes sense to see that progression towards that. So yeah, I'm there with you. This is definitely one of my favorites. I'm looking forward to really getting into it.
Yeah, and the whole issue of going from this to Ninth Assassin, it's like, this is the one that makes you say, oh, shit! And then Ninth Assassin makes you say, oh, shit.
Ew.
Yeah, one is the positive woohoo, and the other is the what the hell am I reading?
We've analyzed their attack, sir, and there are spoilers. Should I have your ship standing by?
Evacuate? In our moment of triumph? I think you overestimate their chances.
Now consider that your spoiler warning, Beyonders and Sentient of all ages, because here we go on another adventure beyond the films.
We're going to take a slightly different approach this time. We're sort of experimenting with ways to cut down some of our recording time, because a lot of times it seems as though when we cover one arc of a comic, it always has to be two episodes, when it certainly wasn't like that originally. So in this case, given the nature of this story, we're going to cover it in one quick summary rather than doing issue by issue and then commenting on it, and then we can start talking about it in depth afterwards. That way the discussion is not interrupted by quite a bit of summarizing.
And let us know, Beyonders, which way you prefer. I mean, if you don't mind the longer ones, or if you like it condensed, you know, we want to know what you think too.
So we start on Coruscant. It is graduation day. Now that the Clone Wars are over, the Imperial Academies, like the one on Ryothal, the one on Coruscant, and so forth, have created an accelerated program to get more officers out on duty faster. And among these cadets that have finally reached their graduation day here just a few months or several months after the events of Revenge of the Sith, which from all I understand, is set shortly after Lost Command. It's still in that same little window there. But then again, that's just kind of an assumption because of the order in which they were published in most respects. One of these cadets is Loretta Tom. Now, Loretta Tom is a character whose family used to do Tabana gas mining. And the Confederacy of Independent Systems during the Clone Wars decided to sabotage the family business, which included tying up his parents and other family members and then blowing up the entire facility with them still inside. Loretta seems to have been the only one, at least the only one mentioned, to have managed to escape, but it cost him, as Mark had said, his left arm and cost him burns to one side of his face, including an eye that at this point is cloudy. So it looks like the eye itself was also taken. So he's seeing out of one eye, lack of depth perception. He's at a significant disadvantage, you would think, to his peers. And he's sort of the bookish type, the studying kind of guy, as opposed to going out for drinks with his Confederates and all. And at this graduation ceremony, we get to meet the headmaster of the overall Imperial Academy system, a guy by the name of Headmaster Gentis. Gentis had been a general during the Clone Wars, hero of all kinds of battles. He himself appears to be burned, or that's just the way he's drawn. Either that or he's really, really scraggly looking. But he gives this great rousing speech about loyalty to the Empire. Not to the Emperor, but to the Empire. We then move on into the evening after the ceremony, and Loretta's friends try basically convince him, hey, let's go check out these prototype, what's eventually going to be TIE fighters. Check out these prototypes and everything. This will be your chance to prove that you can fly them. But it's all a ruse to lock him in the cockpit of one of them, because all the other cadets, and I do mean all of them, it appears, have a plan. They're in league with Gentis on something. Loretta manages to launch, kind of at a danger to himself because they're not exactly perfected, launch himself out in an ejector seat, and as he's coming back down to the surface of Coruscant, or the surface level that he was on, he sees explosions. And it turns out that Gentis has basically fomented a rebellion and a coup within the Empire. He's gotten all these cadets throughout the entire system, it appears, to be loyal to him and to the Empire, not to the Emperor. He basically, Gentis has lost all but one, it seems, of his own sons and a whole lot of kids that he had trained to the Imperial War Machine just in the last several months. Lots and lots of them dying. There's a point at which they show this giant crematorium where the bodies are being burned into ash because there are just so many of them. And he's made a vow that he will serve the Empire, but he will not allow more of his sons or other people's sons to die needlessly, thrown into basically a meat grinder by the Emperor. Very much like we got with the characters in Lost Command, saying that the Empire had betrayed them by making them essentially into slaves with no real meaning. So we pick up with issue 2 amidst that battle. Loretta makes it back to the site of the bombing, to where the graduation was and everything, and finds that it's his own friends who are doing this. He's the one who recognizes this is Academy mates, despite the disguises that they are wearing. And when one of them says, you know, you would never have joined us. You would have drawn too much attention. Stand with us now. Loretta kills him. Says, you know, you should have asked me yesterday. But this idea that he is loyal to the Empire and these people are all traitors despite the fact that they were his friends. He bows to Lord Vader, who is there on the scene, and the two of them go back towards the palace, the Imperial Palace, only to find that a deadly necrotic virus has been released inside the palace by some Academy big shots, like big name students, who have been brought to personally see the Emperor. And in doing so, it allowed them to get close enough to release this necrotic virus. So everybody inside appears to be dying, with the exception of two people. Palpatine himself, who's using the dark side to keep the virus at bay, but not for long, he needs help. And from the pages of Empire, Trachta, who will later be Grand Moff Trachta, who himself is kind of like Loretta in that he has prosthetics in his case, because of something that happened to him earlier, which we'll get to momentarily. So they take the Sith Infiltrator slash Scimitar, or something that certainly looks like it. Maybe it's another version or another model based on Darth Maul's ship as opposed to his actual ship, but it was in Republic hands. So this may actually be the one. And they need to find a place to get the Emperor to safety. He's put into a medical container thing to try to keep him alive, but they got to find a safe place to go, because at this point, the Empire is too fragile, too weak, doesn't have a big enough army to control the galaxy. If they show any sign of weakness with the Emperor, chances are Gentis will get more people to his cause and manage to take over the entire Empire. So Vader and Loretta Tom go to where Vader thinks he can find just such a location. They visit the Jedi Temple. Even as they are doing so, another of Gentis' plans kicks into motion, telling all the droids within 5 kilometers of his signal to kill all Imperial officers that they find. Fortunately for Trashta, he manages to take out the medical droid that tries to take him out. Vader and Loretta make their way into the Jedi Temple, tearing through droids, and make their way to the Jedi Council Chamber, where they play a holographic record that, of course, Vader knows of because he is Anakin, in which Anakin discusses with the Jedi Council a secret prison, the ghost prison called Prism. And the idea is that this prison, in the mass shadow of the 6th moon of Dyab, is where the worst of the worst go. Think of this as the Star Wars equivalent of Guantanamo Bay. This is where the extreme people within the Confederacy, the people who are too dangerous to be put into a regular prison, are rounded up, oftentimes by people like Anakin, who's captured more than half of the prisoners here, and sent off to this secret prison with no trials, no nothing, until presumably the war is over, and the Jedi are keeping this prison a secret even from Palpatine. But since Anakin's the one that sent him there, even though he didn't know where exactly it was, Anakin at least knows that something like this exists. So Vader knows to look for those records. They find the location. Vader goes completely nuts, tearing through the Jedi Council chamber about the betrayal of the Jedi and so forth, and they set out for this prison. En route, we get to learn Trashta's background about him being on Noctralis, hunting down a Jedi who had defected to Count Dooku's side, who was at the time just a Padawan, who had a thermal detonator when he was caught that wound up costing Trashta his eyes and screwing up something in his respiratory system and at least one of his arms, basically taking him out of play for a little while, now that though he's back with all these cybernetics and all these things to help him make his way through. As they're on their way there, Gentis keeps his plot in motion. Grand Moff Tarkin, overseeing the Death Star, is now the highest ranking officer, in theory, within the Empire, with the Emperor supposedly, according to Gentis, in a secure facility being treated by his medical staff, even though Gentis has no idea where he is. But even with Vader, he's out of play. Vader has supposedly disappeared. He's out of play. Trashta has disappeared. He's out of play. That leaves Tarkin, Wilhuff Tarkin, and Gentis is willing to allow him to come to Coruscant to take over, although this is part of his plan, because he also needs to take out Tarkin. He needs to take out the high-ranking Imperial officers to make himself the new Emperor and run things his way, that he sees as best. Meanwhile, the Sith Infiltrator arrives at Prism. Vader kills the one Jedi Warden, the only Jedi who's stationed there, who has been there for months and has no idea the war is over, no idea the Republic has fallen. And as they make their way inside, they start trying to come up with a plan to somehow save the Emperor and take back the Empire. Their means of doing so is going to be to use the prisoners. There are 208 prisoners, I believe it is, when they first arrive. One of them happens to be the Padawan who had caused the injuries to Trashta, so Trashta lessens that down to 207 by beating him to death very violently. But in seeing the descriptions of these different prisoners, Trashta comes up with the idea, let's release the prisoners, turn them into our own army, and go after Gentis. That way you've got an unpredictable fighting force. Vader's decision is not to simply release all of them and just offer them the chance, hey, you'll get a pardon if you do this, but to start basically a blood sport. He opens up all the cells and says that those who survive the coming battle in the next few minutes will be given the chance to join him. Among those who wind up surviving is Captain Sean Volta, a Confederacy sniper whose father had been a pilot. His ship had been commandeered by Republic troops, and he wound up being killed in the battle that ensued. So she doesn't like the Jedi. She doesn't like the Republic. She's willing to work with them for a pardon. So after all the blood and guts is done, they give Trashta gives a nice rousing speech about how they could be loyal citizens to the Empire, how the Jedi have fallen, the Republic was corrupt. You know, all your old transgressions will be gone if you follow us. Let us make you into real Imperials. And it's an idea that sounds doable because at least those that survive, most of them, manage to agree to be a part of this. Along the way, as they're trying to come up with what comes next, what the next step in their plan's going to be, Larita Tom winds up talking to Volta, the woman who's the sniper. He finds out about her background, but in talking about the whole piloting thing, he's like, wait a second. You know, could you predict where a ship would exit hyperspace if you know generally where they're coming from? She says yes, and they set a plan in motion. And at that point, it seems like the fast forward button and the speed button is hit on the story as we move into the last issue, and it goes rather quickly, almost too quickly. It would have been nice if this was a 6-issue series. An Imperial Lambda-class shuttle arrives on Coruscant bearing Grand Moff Tarkin, and Gentis is waiting for him, ready to take him into custody. However, Moff Tarkin has brought Vader, Tom, Trachta, Volta, and these other people who are willing to give up give their loyalty to the Empire in return for freedom from prison. And this huge battle ensues inside the docking bay, wherein Larita Tom delivers a major blow to Gentis, not by killing Gentis himself, but by shooting Gentis's only son that's left, Kaul, C-A-U-L. And the Emperor, now having healed with the dark side and such in the time that they were at the Ghost Prison, is also aboard the shuttle and emerges and force fries with force lightning, Gentis, killing him. The remaining traitors are all rounded up and shot and killed. Trachta is promoted to Grand Moff and made the new headmaster of the Imperial Academies. Larita Tom is being promoted from lieutenant, which is the rank that he had after graduation, to being an admiral. And the question now becomes, what do we do with the people that are left from the prison? Trachta wants to keep to his word and be an honorable man, but Vader doesn't want them to be loose in the Empire because Vader expects them to eventually turn on the Empire. So the solution that they come up with, supposedly, that Trachta believes, is they're going to stick them all on a ship and send them away to kind of the far reaches of the galaxy where they have their freedom, but they're exiles, essentially, that they could not be in Imperial space or they will be killed. But if they want to live, hey, go out there, wild space, unknown regions, whatever, just get the heck out of Dodge. Of course, that becomes a moot point because as they're lifting off, the ship explodes, something arranged by Larita on orders from Vader. Trachta is not at all happy about this. Again, he is a man who may be Imperial, but he's at least somewhat a person of honor when it suits him. We end with kind of a shock. Turns out that Volta was not on the ship. Volta is going to wind up serving as an Imperial military officer, supposedly under Larita Tom's command. But even as he is having that conversation with her and congratulating her, Vader's having a conversation with Palpatine, where Palpatine basically says that Tom is ruthless, he's efficient, he should be groomed to be a better officer, so that if Vader should ever fall, the young admiral could then prove to be a worthy successor, despite the whole, you know, not being able to use the Force or anything. This, of course, sets off Vader's internal alarm bells, and when Vader finally asks to see Larita Tom on a balcony to speak about the future, supposedly, his last lesson is never to suffer rivals. He grabs Larita with his hand, not with the Force, and throws him over the railing to his death. And thus ends Darth Vader and the Ghost Prison. Quite the story. Definitely a favorite with a lot of interesting characters along the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when I jump in, the first thing that always struck me was that, you know, Larita being crippled. I think I was about 4 to 6 pages in before I even realized that. You know, and then you go back and you're looking at it, and sure enough, it's like he's got the full sleeve the whole time. It's drawn such a way that it stays realistic to the character, And it also, I kind of get the feeling that it's supposed to be appeasing to or appealing to the eye of the rest of the Imperial troops, because they never tie off, you know, the extra sleeve. They let it hang all the way down like it's a full arm, which, again, it gets me that aspect of the fact that, you know, you would think that the Empire would force him to get a prosthetic or something. You know, the fact that he's never had to was kind of surprising to me. When they get to the point where they do the test flight, I thought that too was an interesting way, because, you know, they have the fact that it's prototypes and stuff and they're sneaking in. It's kind of like a hazing aspect, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. And then they lock him in. You're just like, oh, dude, they're going to disgrace him. You know, I mean, there were so many angles going through as this was going that I was like, okay, where are we going with this character? I was very interested right away with this character, especially the fact that he was crippled, but yet he was still abled. And, you know, to see the fact that the Empire didn't just automatically discard him, you know, I thought that was pretty interesting and cool walking forward. And, you know, Gentis' speech was a good one as well. You know, you had mentioned the fact that, you know, the only thing he really says is, are you willing to die? And I didn't catch that really even on the second read through. It wasn't until you had mentioned that that it really dawned on me. You know, I mean, that he was talking about loyalty to the Empire, not to the Emperor. And he gets to the end. He goes, in fact, you need only pass a single simple test. Answer one question. Do you have the courage to die for your Empire? And, you know, when you see later when he's standing over the crematorium and stuff, you're like, that's pretty much all he sees all the troops doing. So I can see how that's very snarky at this point when he's saying that.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those guys that's it goes back to the thing that, and I'm sure others have said this much better, but I'm always reminded of Lucas Walinchek from Sequest, in which he says, easiest way to lie, tell the truth except the part that really matters. And that's kind of what Gentis is doing here. Gentis is not saying anything that's outright false, but he's focusing on the Empire instead of the Emperor and trying to sort of craft the way that these cadets, these graduates, look at things as being about serving, you know, the society. It's kind of like, it goes back to the Roman Empire, for instance. One of the big issues near the end of the Roman Empire that helps lead to the rise of Julius Caesar, the first triumvirate, eventually the second triumvirate once he is dead and all that, is this fact that as you're getting into the latter era of the Roman Republic, there's all kinds of financial issues that are happening, especially to people who were former slaves who became farmers, or former soldiers, excuse me, who became farmers. And a lot of people, their only choice was to get back into the military, but it was getting into the military not with the promise of something better from the government. It was with the promise of something better from their general. The general would look after their needs. It wasn't, you know, the government has hired you back as a soldier, you just happen to be serving under this person. It's, this general has hired you, he is seeing to your needs, you are loyal to him first, government second. It's why you could have, for instance, Pompey and Julius Caesar going at each other, even though they're supposed to be serving the same government. That's kind of the idea here. It's not about the one person. It's not about the man. It's about the society. It's about serving the galaxy in the way that you see fit to bring order. I mean, these are people who believe in the New Order, believe in the idea that the Republic was corrupt and flawed. They want something better, but their way of going about it will be violent overthrow. Two things that stand out to me for this issue. One is, I never even noticed until at the end of reading it the second time. I think I noticed it the first time, but it slipped my mind, that he does have the one missing arm. His face is what draws the attention. The fact that he's got an empty sleeve sitting there didn't dawn on me the second time till right there near the end. I think it's particularly because the fourth panel of the entire story, where it says, that day I was just Cadet Tom, blah, 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 shows someone that I thought was supposed to be him, but you can tell looking more closely, because we hadn't seen his face yet in the story, that it's not burned and the hair is different, so this isn't him, it's just a cadet, but that cadet is using both arms. So with him saying, I was just a cadet, while it was showing that individual, the idea of both arms not being there hadn't really occurred to me for some reason. But the thing that stands out to me with this issue, aside from just some of the fantastic visuals like the launching of the escape pod and such, is about this plan. It's an interesting plan, and it's kind of cool with the idea of having essentially someone who is training a new generation of officers, waiting until all those officers are together in order to then bring about this uprising. My question is, how realistic is it? I mean, being able to get all the cadets, pretty much, to side with Gentis, because he was their headmaster and the stuff that he trained them against the Empire. Nobody else got wind of this. Larita Tom is this incredibly smart guy, and he never suspected anything. The idea that it could be some cadets working directly with Gentis, that makes sense. And I figure that's probably what this actually is. It's probably just they've bumped off some of the others or gotten them out of the way that the friends tried to get Larita Tom out of the way. But it seems like if this is really supposed to be all the cadets from all these academies, to me that stretches credulity saying that that's how this plan could have went down. I mean, we have to take it as a given, otherwise the rest of the story winds up meaningless. But I don't know how feasible something like that could realistically be.
Well, I didn't think it was all of them, because it was Tom that points out to Vader that they had to assume that it was all of them, that he had been, you know, training these soldiers for years and that they didn't know how far back his betrayal went. And I liked that because it threw everyone into question. But I didn't think that it was actually every single person. The scene that you're talking about, though, where it showed the guy with both hands, I had that same moment at first, too. And then when you're re-looking at it, you see, you know, that Tom's sitting down studying, which I think that this goes to part into what you're saying as well, because Tom was always about studying. You know, when the other guys go to take him out for his night out and to get a drink, he wants to just go back and study. That's all he's been doing. He's got a nose in a book. He's very wholesome at this point. You know, I mean, all he's after is bettering himself and bettering the Empire through his actions in the Empire, and he wants to be the best at what he can do. So he's, you know, he's fully just studying. He's got no time for women, no time for drinks, and very little time for friends.